Hello, listeners, and welcome to the third episode of the House of Deputies Blue Book podcast. I'm your host, President of the House of Deputies, Julia Ayala Harris, and it is my pleasure to guide you through the fascinating world of the General Convention and its interim bodies. This podcast is your bridge to staying informed, engaged, and connected with the pulse of the Episcopal Church. Whether you're a deputy to the 81st General Convention, a member of a local parish, or simply a church geek, you've come to the right place for valuable insights, thought-provoking conversations, and a deeper understanding of the church's role in today's rapidly changing world. The General Convention is the governing body of the Episcopal Church, meeting every 3 years. This time we're meeting 2 years later because of the pandemic. It's made up of deputies and bishops from each diocese. And in the months leading up to General Convention, a number of Blue Book reports are created by standing committees, task forces, and what we call interim bodies of the Episcopal Church. Interim because they're bodies between General Conventions. These reports provide background context and review process on various church initiatives and programs. They also put forth policy recommendations for priorities, budgets, and potential resolutions for General Convention to consider. In the past, the reports were published in a book with a blue cover, hence the term Blue Book Reports. Brilliant, isn't it? This book helps deputies and bishops prepare for discussions and decisions at General Convention. However, it's important to note the Blue Book is now completely virtual and is no longer a literal book, but that's for the General Convention office to answer. Some of the key Blue Book reports cover topics like the church's budget, social justice issues, church structure and governance, liturgy and music, ministry programs, ecumenical relations, and more. Blue Book reports shape the agenda and output of each General Convention. They provide critical information that underpins the church's priorities, policies, budget, and administration for the next triennium. We have deputies from two such standing commissions here with us today. In this episode, Cultivating Leaders, Formation and Mission with deputies Catherine Carr Cornejo and Judith Conley. Today, we'll dive into the endeavors of the Standing Commission on Formation and Ministry Development and the Standing Commission on World Mission, illuminating their significance for both the current and future trajectory of the Episcopal Church. This episode provides a journey through the program shaping our leaders and extending the church's mission across borders, showcasing initiative approaches to ministry formation and emphasizing the interconnectedness of the global Episcopal community. So let's dive in and get to know our fellow deputies while exploring how these pivotal topics are shaping our churches tomorrow. Thank you so much, Deputy Judy Conley and Catherine Carr Cornejo, for being here today on this podcast.
Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome.
This is so exciting. So let's tell the listeners a little bit about who you both are, what diocese you're in, and what your ministries look like. And you can jump in whenever.
Would you like me to be in?
Go ahead, Judy.
I'm Judy Conley from the Diocese of Arizona. I'm a deputy for General Convention, and I'm a senior deputy, which means that I've been to at least 10 General Conventions.
Have you really been to 10 General Conventions?
In some form, yes.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It has morphed quite a bit.
I bet. That's a whole nother podcast.
Indeed. In my diocese, I have been working with the Anti-Racism Committee, which has been pretty much my life's passion. I have done anti-racism training for quite a while, and I am doing it in the diocese as well. Is there something else that you'd like to hear about me?
Maybe just, I can think of two additional things. One, you all in the Diocese of Arizona will be the host of the 82nd General Convention in 2027. Okay. So maybe you could put a pitch in for that at the end.
Yeah, oh, indeed. I was at the General Convention in 1991 when it was held here.
And, I was going to ask.
I vowed that I'd never go back to Phoenix, Arizona in the summer. However, I'm a testament to one who makes vows, and vows can be changed. And I've learned that obviously it's going to be hot, but Arizona is used to the heat, so it knows what to do in order to take care of its visitors as well as ourselves. So it will be a good time. I can almost assure you, I won't put it on the line, but I don't think you'll need your umbrellas, except for the shade.
That sounds good, Judy. That sounds good. And the other piece I was thinking is that I've known you for what is now over 10 years, I think, because we served on TREC, the Task Force to Reimagine the Episcopal Church together. And so
Yes,
you've
indeed.
been, you were a guide to me then, even. So I'm thrilled to have you here.
That was a wonderful committee. I mean, we were surrounded and in the midst of such wonderful people to work on what the church should look like. And it was very rewarding. And I've spent, as part of World Mission, and the reason I'm on it is that because I was a member of the Anglican Consultative Council for 9 years, which gave me a completely different perspective of who we are as the Episcopal Church in the wider sphere of the Anglican Communion and the differences and commonalities that we have. So it's been quite an enjoyable ministry.
Oh, that's so cool. And we're also joined here today with Deputy Catherine Carr Cornejo. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're at.
Yeah, so hi, my name is Catherine Carr Cornejo. I live in the Diocese of Spokane, mighty Eastern Washington and North Idaho. As my colleague David Sibley says, if you are in the Pacific time zone in Idaho, you're with us. And we're east of the Cascade Mountains. So it's not rainy where we live. People think you're Washington State and they think Seattle rain. No, that's not the case for us. So I am a parishioner at the Cathedral of St. John the Evangelist in the city of Spokane. I have been involved there. I also have lived in a number of other dioceses prior to moving to Spokane. My day job is I'm a college professor at a Christian liberal arts university, and so it's been a really beautiful convergence of both what I get paid to do and what I do with my volunteering in the church. In terms of what I do in my diocese, I just finished a term as the co-chair of our Commission on Ministry. I have been a delegate to diocesan convention multiple times. I've been involved with our beloved community working group and with our formation cohort. So I've been doing a number of things with that over the years. And then in my parish, I served on our chapter, which is our fancy cathedral term for a vestry. And I was junior warden at that time, which is funny because we have a really strong property committee, so I didn't really have anything to do. But it still felt
You're
nice
not
to have a
supposed to
tutorial.
say that.
What?
And were
I'm
you
just
in that
kidding.
role also the youngest junior warden that the church had
I
had?
was fairly young. I was also fairly young to be on chapter, and to not have like a relative who had served before. And I've done a number of things with like writing prayers to the people, leading prayers. But my main love, and no offense to any of the other committees I've served on and commissions and boards and whatnot, but the best committee ever is St. John the Evangelist, our cathedral's Adult Faith Formation Committee. We are amazing and it's really fun, and we think about how to meet the formation needs of adults in our congregation, and it's just an absolute delight. And since I teach, young adults, primarily, it's another great way to use gifts and skills for both formation and discernment in those areas. And so that's a little bit about me.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm also realizing that this is my third podcast in this series, but my first where it's all lay women and all
Yay!
laity. We're giving all kinds of thumbs up and cheers. So here is my get to know you question. So deputies can get to know who you all are, aside from what interim body you were on. And that is, which decade do you love the most and why? The 1960s, the 1970s, the 80s, the 90s? Oh, these are deep thinking faces. You guys took this really seriously.
Well, I've been around more decades than you both, so I have to think more
You
often.
have more to choose from.
Well, and does it have to be a decade in which we were alive? Like,
No, it
any
could be
more
the
parameters?
20s if you're really into flapper stuff. It could be whatever you want it to be, or the 1870s, or maybe I would say the 1780s because the House of Deputies started meeting in 1785.
No, that's before my time.
This makes me think about the question that sometimes people ask, like if you could live at any time, when would you live? And
Right.
my answer to that is always like the future. I want to live in the future because, I'm a woman, I'm educated, and things would not have been great for me in most of the past.
Oh,
So,
right. So you pick a future decade.
yeah, yet to be determined
Yes.
because. Yeah, but when I think of like culturally, I was in high school in the 90s, I was in college in the early 2000s, and that is definitely like the nostalgia bomb, right? Like when I hear the music or I see, my 20-year-old students dressing the way I dressed at 20, and I'm just like, oh, I remember that. And so like I have affection, nostalgia for that, but I would not want to live then again. I want to live in the
Yeah,
future.
right. I completely feel that. How about you, Judy?
Okay, well, if I had to choose a decade, I would say the 60s.
Yeah.
And the 60s because there was so much aliveness during that time. In addition to the civil rights movement and all of the activity around that, people of my age and ilk were happy people, pretty much. There were the flower children and the hippies, and
You were starting
everybody.
something new and edgy.
Yeah, everything was different.
Yeah.
And people were willing to explore. Nonconformity was the standard. And so it was a fun time, and the music was great.
Right.
And we have wonderful music then.
Which is one of the things that I tend to be nostalgic for the 90s, having been a teenager in the 90s, and watching my daughter in high school wearing clothes that I would have worn in high school in the 90s, which was at that time kind of a tribute to the 60s a little bit. Not full bell-bottom pants, but like bootcut pants and lots of denim. I'm just so happy denim's back. I can't tell you. I feel vindicated. Anyway, since it's not a podcast about fashion, although I really want it to be, and we'll get there at some point, I'm sure. Tell us more about the interim bodies that you both served on and what initiatives that body has that's coming to the 81st General Convention. And just feel to jump on in. Oh,
All
yeah, go
right.
ahead, Judy.
Well, I'm a member of the Standing Commission on World Mission. And that commission's basic mandate is to identify global mission in a domestic and foreign missionary society in our diocese, congregations, mission organizations, etc., and to develop policies. Proposals for world mission for consideration by General Convention. We had two major mandates from the last General Convention, General Convention 80. The one that has received quite a bit of attention by our commission. Is the one, it was A017, and it dealt with colonialism and how our church participates. And as a study on the colonialism, we've also uncovered Christian nationalism as a major issue that had to be wrestled with. And so we've spent a great deal of time on that. The other resolution mandated that General Convention encourage dioceses, seminaries, jurisdictions, etc., to appoint an individual to be represented on something we've called now the Global Mission Advocates. And the Global Mission Advocates is a group of people from all of the places that I've just mentioned who gather, and we've only worked with dioceses. We've not addressed getting representation from any of the other groups, because getting representation from each diocese has been a major event for us.
Oh, I bet.
And we have quite a few dioceses represented. And as a result of that, we're going to be having a conference in April in San Antonio. And we will
What are the dates for any listeners who might be?
April 3rd through April 6th.
Okay, in San Antonio, Texas.
Yes.
Excellent.
At Camp Allen.
Oh, Camp Allen. Of course.
Sure, yeah. And the purpose of the group is to share information with each other, to have the support of others doing like work, and to spread the gospel about global mission within their jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting. We work with four guiding principles, which are, and these are going to sound familiar to you, Julia: crossing boundaries, listening deeply, living like Jesus together.
That does sound familiar.
Doesn't it sound like a little like Trek?
It does.
But each of those principles we've been spending time with prior to the conference, and we're really looking forward to it. The people who are the, we call them GMAs, the Global Mission Advocates, are really excited and have a lot of energy around global mission. So we're really looking forward to this conference coming up.
Yeah.
The other area that has been of interest is the gender-based violence. And we've done some work on that, but that's going to require much more time than we had in this last triennium. That will continue. Mm-hmm. And so the commission has been working throughout the triennium, and with the Global Mission Advocates in addition, they've been meeting on a monthly basis by Zoom.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so it's working really well. I think Global Mission will now have a much better way to present what it is that we are supposed to be doing as a part of the Domestic and Foreign Missionary Society.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Judy. And you just reminded me to let folks know, in case they don't, that unlike task forces, standing commissions continue through general conventions, and their mandates get expanded beyond a task force. Let me back up. A task force only exists typically between two general conventions, so usually a triennium. But a standing commission will continue on for as long as it needs to. And it has two classes. It'll have a senior class and a junior class. And those appointments are 6-year terms. So that's why when Deputy Conley said, oh, this work will continue, it's because a standing commission can continue the work going forward. So they have a lot of high importance, especially to general convention. And Deputy Carr Cornejo was on another standing commission. You want to tell us about that one?
I was, yeah. So I serve on the Standing Commission for Formation and Ministry Development. And it's an interesting standing commission in that there were many predecessor bodies. There was, in fact, previously a standing commission related to formation and ministry. But there's definitely a institutional knowledge gap between when there was one, the things that were kind of like task forces and working groups, and like now we have a standing commission again. And so trying to figure out the lay of the land has been a bit of a challenge for us as we've gotten started. But so we are newly constituted in this biennium, and we include folks from around the church. We've got multilingual folks, we've got folks in all orders of ministry. And I think, I mean, I don't have all of the data for everything because, you know, I love the church, but we are not the best at data collection.
Yeah, that will be on another podcast,
But we may be the only standing commission. Well, no, maybe not, because SCLM is their chair deacon.
There is a deacon on SCLM.
But is he the chair?
No, he's not the chair.
So the chair, we're the only standing
Oh,
commission whose
yes.
chair is a deacon.
Yes. Jess Effring Robert. Okay, I see. I see. Okay. Gotcha.
So yeah, Jess Elfring. And so that's fun. But yeah, so we've spent a lot of time kind of figuring out what our mandates are, what we can do best versus what other bodies are already doing to not replicate their work. And so there's been a lot of organizational work that's been going on. And as we are all formation people and we want to have plans and tasks and projects and things, it's very easy for us to get going on, let's just do things. But one of the things that I really appreciate about our group is that together we've recognized actually we need to not just automatically jump into doing, and we need to think about where we are now and where we want to be and kind of have those big picture conversations. And so when our Blue Book report is available, you'll be able to read about a number of to and from statements. And so like we would say this is who we are now and we want to move from this particular context to a different context and to let that kind of dreaming guide our work. And so for
Oh,
example,
interesting.
commissions on ministry, every diocese has them and we don't talk to each other. It's really hard to even find out who is chairing commissions on ministries in different dioceses. And the
Oh,
structures for
interesting.
how that all works is different. And so for our standing commission, it was important to say we want to move from unconnected commissions on ministry who don't know what other groups are doing, who don't have support for their ministries outside of their own diocese, to networked communicating commissions on ministry that have a community and can support one another in ministry. So that sort of structure is how we are framing our work moving forward.
That is really interesting. Because this also helps us be a more learning organization in addition to networking and, problem solving and all that kind of stuff. Because it
Yeah, I
occurred to me
mean,
that they
because
were isolated, but of course they are.
yeah, well, and everybody assumes that what they know is normal. And we've learned that that is not the case. And particularly with some of the big picture issues like who has access to ordination processes and how they have access, we can't address that as a whole denomination if we are not talking to each other about what we're doing and what we're not doing and what's worked and what hasn't.
Yeah,
So
that's exactly what I was thinking. That's really
yeah,
helpful.
so that's something as a former Commission on Ministry chair, I'm excited about that. We divided into four working groups around kind of different areas of our mandate, and to respond to the different pieces of legislation that were referred to us from General Convention. And so we have a working group on lifelong learning, which is the one that I'm most involved with. And we have really focused, again, on access and particularly language access to theological education and other materials. We have all of our prayer book material translated to English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole, and French. However, there are lots of other languages that are spoken in our churches that are spoken in our communities. And when people say, oh, well, it's in the prayer book, that doesn't help if you're in Tbilisi, Georgia, and you don't speak any of those other languages. Mm-hmm. That doesn't help if you're in a Korean-speaking community in LA. So one of the things that I'm really excited about is at least the catechism section of the Book of Common Prayer, we're asking and proposing that it be funded to be translated into a series of other languages that are not official languages of the church, but are languages of the communities of our church.
Interesting, yeah.
And so that can also be an evangelistic tool, but also, mm-hmm. How many times has somebody asked you, well, what's a sacrament? Mm-hmm. And you just pull out the catechism response. Right? Outward and visible sign of inward and spiritual grace, because it is. Yeah. And so being able to say, this is what makes our church, and making it accessible to people in their own language is really important. Yeah. And so in that line, we are also looking at the way that theological education materials are available in different languages or not. And this, of course, gets into a much broader conversation around residential seminaries, low residency seminaries, local formation programs. And something that was really important to our subgroup was that when we talk about theological education, we're not just talking about seeking a master's in divinity, right? Mm-hmm. We're not just talking about folks seeking ordination. We're talking about all of us.
Right.
And so we kind of broadened what we were looking at. And so we've done an audit of the catalog, the publicly available catalogs of some of the publishing houses associated with the church, to see just like what language are things published in? If there's something in translation, what was its original language versus what was in translation? And as is very common, and we're focusing primarily on Spanish, because that was a need that was identified to us, that particularly for mainland U.S. folks to have access to materials and resources in Spanish. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of things in Spanish available, but they're almost all translated from English. They are not originally written in Spanish. And there are not things that are originally written in Spanish that are then translated to English for a broader audience as well.
Right.
And so what we're looking forward to doing in the future is kind of really entering into conversation with folks about how can we think about having multiple perspectives that we might not be getting currently because of those linguistic barriers. So that's one area. We have a working group on mental health as well that's been working really closely with the task force, individuals with mental illness. Mm-hmm. And particularly is interested in, again, language access, helping making, mental health first aid available to Spanish-speaking communities as well.
And in the first episode of this podcast, we interviewed Megan Carlson, deputy who is on the Task Force for Individuals with Mental Health. So people can listen to that one, too.
Oh, yeah, and the curriculum's great. They consulted with us on that. And it's been a delight to work with them. We also have a group that is looking at leadership development. And they're proposing a number of resolutions related to materials or research needed to figure out how to compensate people who are not currently compensated. So that can be deacons or non-stipendiary priests. And to do so in a way that's legal, but also to do so in a way that responds to our commitment to justice and equity, amongst other things. And then we have a Commissions on Ministry subgroup, which, as I mentioned, is trying to bring Commissions on Ministry together. So if you're a comm chair or a comm member and you haven't heard about this, please contact me or any other member of the standing commission.
I love it. Put in plugs.
That's a very long way of looking at kind of an overview of all the work we're doing. Lots of moving parts, but we are trying to see the whole and to work well with others. So
wonderful. My next question for both of you is, Given the work that your standing commissions have been doing, in what ways are these initiatives that you talked about going to challenge the church to live into our baptismal covenant? Judy, you want to go first on that?
Sure. Well, in terms of colonialism and our participation in that, that is not, shall I say, a very popular couch to sit on.
Yeah, it's not
It's
comfortable.
going to push people to reflect on our behavior and how we are open to difference in other parts of the world, and I might say in our own backyard, as well as Christian nationalism, which has become a great issue for people to look at in the church and through the lens of politics as well. And so that is going to challenge our church to really not be on the middle of the roadside, but we're going to have to make some stands. And I know, having been an Episcopalian, fourth generation, that is a comfortable place to be. But I think we're being called to be uncomfortable, and we're at a point now where we have to say, I'm willing. It can't be another committee or meeting or Zoom conference to discuss it. I think the time is now. And I actually, that was in the gospel of last week. That word now was used.
Yes.
And I pulled that out because we have enough information. I mean, with technology, there's no way that we don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. And so we don't have any more excuses. So I see that as tension, because there are those who still want to be comfortable in their pews and on their Sunday mornings and then go about their business. But this is going to become a part of a lifestyle in terms of change. So I'm looking forward to the struggle, but I think that it's going to be a healthy struggle.
Oh, I feel like you were just preaching.
Well,
And
if that's what it takes.
I will join you on that uncomfortable, unpopular couch.
We're going to need a bigger couch.
Okay. Maybe a sectional.
Sectional ottoman or two. Deputy Card Cornejo, how is your standing commission really challenging the church to live into our baptismal covenant?
Yeah, so one of the things that I and others have noticed is we often pay attention to the last questions. Will you in the baptismal covenant, right? We really like talking about seeking and serving Christ in all persons and loving our neighbors as ourselves and respecting the dignity of every human being. And all those things are fundamental. But that also means that we kind of not ignore, but we're less comfortable to kind of go with Judy's, like, let's be uncomfortable with the earlier will you questions. And so, are we going to continue in the teaching and fellowship of the apostles? Part of what we're trying to do in terms of, helping bring like equity lenses and accessibility lenses to the work of formation for all ages and all people across the church is doing that, right? We're trying to ensure that everyone can be met where they are in their formation journey and continue to teach and fellowship and learn and grow in the knowledge and love of God, as you know, the Eucharistic prayer says. If that, I'm not a liturgist, don't quote me on that. You know, we have to teach people how to recognize evil. How can we resist evil and repent if we don't see it right in front of us? And so how can we help folks see the ways that we have harmed or been harmed, and how can we learn how to build Christian community together in the aftermath?
Which sounds like it goes right to what Deputy Conley was just saying.
I was getting very excited about
colonialism and Christian nationalism, how to recognize evil.
Yeah. And when you recognize it, what does repentance look like? What does turning around look like? Mm-hmm. In my diocese, that group of Patriot Front folks were in our diocese in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, about 45 minutes from where I'm sitting right now. And so how do we as a church bear witness to the harm that's caused and show and live into our baptismal promises to repent and return to the Lord, that is part of our community? Yeah. So, you know, thinking about that, and then, you know, we want to help people be able to talk about Jesus.
As Episcopalians, are you sure?
Yes, I am. I am.
Talk about Jesus?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, why do you follow Jesus? Why do you go to church? Why do you go to this church? Mm-hmm. Those are important questions that everyone, regardless of where they are in their faith journey, should be able to articulate. And that it's not just you have a gift for evangelism or you don't. Mm-hmm. Those are skills that can be learned. And so how can we support in different areas through lifelong formation, through access to materials, being able to do that? And one of the things that I forgot to mention earlier, which is funny because it's like the most important thing for my standing commission, is funding and construction and maintenance of a digital formation hub. Right now, there are lots of great resources out there, and you have to know where to look. Mm-hmm. You have to know, oh, this organization is called this and they do this thing, or this organization does that, or, oh, I have a friend in this diocese and they told me about this other thing, which is not equally accessible to everyone. And so we are going to be asking for funds to create an Episcopal formation hub, kind of like EpiscopalCommonPrayer.org, but for formation materials, so that you're an Episcopal church, you want to have, you know, a guided conversation on a particular topic, you can go and look and see what kinds of materials are available, what kinds of resources, what has worked well for people in communities like yours. And so we're really excited about that, because we can collect all of the things, but if we don't have a way to share them, then there's no point.
So. Right. And cultivating that Episcopal identity across every church.
All of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we are one. We are one body, as we say.
Yes. Yes. So what are you all looking forward to in this general convention this summer in Louisville?
I'm looking forward to seeing real people. I've seen faces on a flat screen and only half of a body at most. It certainly serves the purpose, and it made all of the sense in the world during our pandemic. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, the continuance makes some sense. But there's nothing like being able to sit down and over a Coca-Cola or a cup of coffee and have conversation with people, mm-hmm. and to touch people. Mm-hmm. You know, I really miss that, and I'm looking forward to it at this next convention. And there'll be some very, as they call them, hot topics, mm-hmm. that will be on the floor, and hopefully enough people have learned how to do civil discourse so, mm-hmm. that we can move forward. You know, the Standing Commission on Liturgy and Music will have quite a bit.
Yep.
in their frying pan. There'll be, I'm sure, quite a number of people looking at reparations as well, and how we work with that. So it's going to be exciting. The worship and the fellowship are going to be probably the most gratifying.
Yeah. Yeah, that big family reunion that we missed out on. Yeah. How about you, Deputy Carr Cornejo?
Yeah, so I'm excited for worship together. Like many folks in our church, I can be really stuck in my ways about what I want worship to do and how I want worship to feel. And I have always really appreciated that General Convention worship shows me that I need to be more open to what I think I need to do or feel or hear. And particularly, you know, since we all live in our own context, being exposed and being able to share in so many contexts that aren't mine, in terms of just worshiping God is amazing. So I love that. And I'm also really excited to just see what happens, you know. I often go into General Convention feeling anxious, and because this is my third as a deputy, yeah, and I was an alternate before that. And I always go and be like, oh, why did I say I wanted to do this? And I get stressed, and I'm like, nothing's gonna happen. And then I always come away just so energized and hopeful about the work of God in the world and the work of our church as part of that. And I am just really, I'm hoping to skip ahead from the anxiety pre-convention and then just like get to the good stuff. But yeah, though I am also like, I still wear a mask everywhere. I still teach in a mask. I still haven't had COVID, knock on wood, please pray. And I'm also really cognizant of the fact that there are still people at really high risk in our communities, in our families. And so I hear everyone else around me being really excited to be in person. But my prayer is that we will still be really careful, and we will care for each other, and we will watch out for one another, and respect that, because for some people, it's still a day-to-day thing that they worry about. So, yeah.
Thank you for reminding us of that, Deputy Carr Cornejo. One of the great joys of doing these podcasts are introducing deputies to each other. So when you were talking about your anxiety, Catherine, Deputy Conley was over here smiling like she knew. And since this will be your 10th something, Deputy Judy Conley, I think now you might have someone that you can say, what do you do with those pre-convention jitters?
I make spreadsheets.
You make sushi? Is that what you said?
Spreadsheets. I make spreadsheets. Last year for our deputy.
Oh, spreadsheets.
I made a spreadsheet of all of the resolutions. And like, yeah.
I love that. Good to know.
We are in Arizona, we're really very fortunate in that it was decided to have a suite for our deputies to come and have breakfast and lunch, because we provide it there. And it's a time when we can come and support each other. And being with, because when you're on the floor, obviously you're together, but so much is going on that, you know, you should be focused on the work at hand, but it allows us to relax. And I think we just have to practice that. There's no formula for getting rid of anxiety, because it's up to the individual. But what is helpful for us is that we do have a time that we can come together, and a place to go where we can relax.
It also sounds like another way that you all are able to build community with each other and sort of debrief and reflect too.
Oh, yeah, indeed. That happens.
Wonderful. As we wrap up today's conversation, I want to extend my deepest gratitude to Deputies Judith Conley and Deputy Catherine Carr Cornejo for sharing their insights and passion with us. Learning more about the work that these two standing commissions are doing has been truly enlightening. To our listeners, thank you for joining us on this exploration of how formation and mission are integral parts to our church's mission. Your engagement and curiosity fuel this podcast. We're eager to hear your thoughts and questions. Reach out to us through our website or on social media channels. We value your feedback and we look forward to incorporating your perspectives into future episodes. Don't forget to tune in to our next episode where we'll dive into another critical aspect of our church's life and mission. Until then, keep reflecting, keep the faith, and keep the faith at the center of your 81st General Convention journey. Thank you for listening to the House of Deputies podcast. Go in peace.